Hey, and welcome back to the Deus Vult Podcast. This is Deacon Dan. This week, we have sort of a special episode. It's kind of a problem, actually. Father Stephen Felicia, in the course of events, has ended up having some sort of extended contact with somebody who had this stupid virus, and as a result is living in a quarantine state for, I don't know, 2 weeks or something. I guess he tested negative. I don't know. But anyway, this is an interesting episode because one of our good friends who is newly home from seminary, Deacon Keaton Lockwood, is actually going to be my second today. He's going to provide us with the topic of conversation, and he's, you know, going to help us into something interesting, as we usually do on the Deus Vult Podcast. So everyone, welcome back, and welcome Deacon Keaton Lockwood.
Thanks, Deacon Dan. Thanks for allowing me to be here today.
It's really good to have you home, my friend.
It's really great to be back in Fort Wayne, because the air really is better here than on the East Coast.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I still remember, you know, coming home either from the Josephinum or the Mount and crossing over the Indiana border and just like being on the verge of tears. Oh, it's so good to be home. Oh my gosh. Okay.
One of our confreres back at seminary told me that anytime he crosses into the Indiana border, who's not from our diocese, but still when he crosses over into the Indiana border, he rolls down all his windows and plays one of the Indiana songs. I forget what it is, but like, I don't know. It's like the Indiana Take Me Home or whatever.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, and then he has a full playlist that's specially designed for Indiana. So that way then, as soon as he pulls into his driveway at his house, it ends. So that's how good it is to be in Indiana.
Really?
Yes.
Wait, is this Andrew Thornton?
That is Andrew
Thornton. Oh, man. Shout out to Andrew Thornton, Diocese of Lafayette, Indiana.
So Thornton, if you're listening, you're famous now. So we'll see what happens with your career as we move forward.
That's right. Yeah. Immortalized on the Deus Vult Podcast with the two deacons. Oh, the deacon squad today.
That's right.
No priests allowed.
No priests. So that means we can have lots of fun. Lots of fun.
Yeah.
The cats are away, so the mice shall play.
Oh, absolutely. 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 All right. Well, hopefully everyone had a good turkey day last week. What did you do for Thanksgiving, Deacon Keaton?
So for Thanksgiving, we had a smaller Thanksgiving this year because of the virus situation.
Sure.
But I still went to Grandma's house, and we had the family come in who was all in town because a few of them are still out of town. You know, they live in other states. And, you know, nothing beats Grandma's home cooking because she made the turkey and the rolls and the yams and the dessert. So, I mean, basically it's Grandma's food. So it's
awesome.
Probably the best ever.
Awesome. This was, I realized it when I was with my family. And I realized that this was the first Thanksgiving that I had been home for in 5 years.
Yeah, same here. This was the first Thanksgiving I've been home for in about 4 years,
right?
Probably, but yeah, this was crazy.
Well, in the course of things, you know, at the Mount, like it's just such a far, you know, it's a great distance to travel to go home. And Thanksgiving break has historically been, you know, very short.
Yeah, like 4.5 days, and you spend two of that just on the road.
Right.
So it's like, what do you do?
Yeah, it's like an 8.5 hour to 9 hour drive, and it's just kind of like a lot. And it's as much as we would love to come home, right? It's challenging to do so. So anyway, yeah, it's good to be home. It is so good to be in Indiana. I really do love it here. Yeah, it's good to be with the good people of God here in this diocese as well, as a wonderful piece of that whole puzzle. So anyway, my friends who are listening, yeah, instead of the Abbott and Costello routine you're used to getting, or the Dean Martin or Jerry Lewis, whatever dynamic duo you want to deal with, today you have two straight men who are, instead of, you know, there's no clown act involved here. Haha, Father Stephen, this is what happens when you're not here. I can just make fun of you without you having any defense. Keaton Lockwood and I, Deacon Keaton and Lockwood and I are cut from the same cloth as far as introvertedness and just kind of getting straight to the point in a lot of ways. Although we do have a lot of the same sort of fun. So it won't have like quite the same dynamic, of course, but it'll be good nonetheless. So again, welcome Deacon Keaton. Deacon Keaton, what is the topic at hand today?
So I was asked to prepare a topic for us to discuss, And the topic that I chose is one of cultural relevance, and it's popular out here in the world. And frankly, we get a lot of questions about this said topic whenever we visit schools in particular, or when young people are around us. So said topic is tattoos today, and discussing the whole entire nature of tattoos, whether they're beauty and art, or whether they're just an abomination that we need to eradicate from this earth and, like, carve them out and, like, shut them all down.
Well, and carve them out. Yikes. Holy smokes. That's dangerous. Yeah. It's sort of a funny thing. In the Catholic world, like many things in moral theology, you know, we run into the problem of you can't have either extreme here. You have to consider all the pieces of the argument, right?
That's true.
It's never as simple as no, or yes, right? It's, okay, you got to consider all the pieces of, you know, what is it? Like, why would you get a tattoo? Where would you get it? What is it? All these sorts of things. And then you have some more of the more philosophical underlying problems that are involved with it, too, that seem to, you know, some people have different opinions about those. But anyway.
Yep, you're right. It's not very cut and dry, and it's case-by-case basis, more or less, as you move on here. But hopefully today we'll be able to give you some kind of direction and also just good principles, etc. The only thing that is no is sports bars, if you remember that from seminary, Deacon Dan.
That's oh, my gosh.
No.
I doubt he listens to podcasts. I doubt he even knows what a podcast is. God love him. Father John Dietrich, man. Shout out to you. Our wonderful, wonderful seminary spiritual director, Archdiocese of Hartford. Oh, man. What a guy.
That's right.
This guy had a bass voice that was deeper than Darth Vader's. It was, he was something else. And then the one time that he was leading Vespers for us, and at the Mount, when we have evening prayer, we also do the Marian Antiphons at the end. So he was leading the Salve Regina, but he doesn't like to sing. Or he claims he can't sing. And so he gets to the end, and he's standing there in the aisleway of the chapel, and just says, Salve Regina. And everyone's like, so does that mean we're speaking it? Does that mean we're supposed to pick up singing it? What do we do, you know? God bless him. I love that guy, though. He's a good priest, good holy priest of God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He led us in the right way.
And even if he doesn't listen to podcasts, his seminarian, Deacon Matthew Collins, who's from his home parish there, and who Father Dietrich is his pastor, does listen to the podcast. So, Matthew, you can be sure to tell Father Dietrich hi from all of us.
That's right. That's right. Very good. Very good. Okay.
All right. Now that we've wasted half of our airtime here, we can get to tattoos.
Oh, believe me, we are still well under the limit for what Stephen and I usually get into. So, yeah. The banter is a happy thing. Good. So, where do we want to land first? We want to talk a little bit about maybe like what the scriptures might say about this. Because I know that's one of the principal arguments that I've heard against it. It's like, I think it's like something in like Leviticus, right? That talks about, you know, like, you know, you shall not tattoo the flesh or something, right?
Right. Yeah. There's a passage in Leviticus that specifically says that you're not supposed to be marking, you know, your flesh with tattoos or put an outward mark around it. But also within that same scripture passage. So if we just look at that one, if you go a few verses before it and a few verses after that, there's also other arguments within there too, that if we're going to talk about that specific passage, you know, we have to read scripture as a whole. So you can't just piecemeal it together. You can't just take one little verse out of its whole entire context and say, oh yeah, you know, the Bible says this. Great. That's true. The Bible does say that, but you also have to look at the context. You have to go before, afterwards, to see the setting and time and place of it.
Right.
So, like I said, if you look at that scripture passage, and like I said, go a few before and a few after it for verses, you'll also see something in there that says that you're not supposed to trim your beard, and that you're not supposed to eat red meat.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, so especially for us Americans here,
I'm an American.
We like our steak and hamburgers, and like for men to have beard. This is coming from a guy who does not have facial hair, by the way.
Yeah, and usually eats chicken.
Hey, listen here. There's nothing wrong with a bird with feathers because it tastes good. All right.
Gosh. Okay.
Anyway, but that is true.
Feathers removed.
Yeah. That is true. Yeah. Please remove the feathers. Disclaimer, do not eat the chicken with the feathers.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank God for Chick-fil-A who does it right. Continue. Please continue.
Oh, man. All right. Yeah. So you look at Leviticus there. And like I said, the passage is more or less, I don't have it in front of me here, but that you shall not mark your skin. Mm-hmm. So also, like I said, you have to take it as a whole. So if we're going to say that you can't do that. And now, once again, we have to remember Leviticus, this is under the old law, right, under Moses, before Christ came.
Right. The context is Old Testament, Old Covenant. Yeah. It still has relevance, but we need to be able to take it in the right way in the light of the coming of Christ, right? We're not fundamentalists. Like, this is one of the things that when our Protestant brothers and sisters get into the scriptures, they kind of fall into this trap. Well, they can't. Certain groups of them certainly do. They fall into this trap of just taking it exactly word for what it says instead of understanding it in the context of life and how the Lord has given it to us and revealed it to us. So, yeah, anyway.
Right. So within that context of the Old Testament, you have the Israelites too. And as we know, they were God's chosen people.
Right.
Like, they were his special people, meant to be set apart from everybody else.
Yeah.
And they're not supposed to be like the other nations. And heck, I mean, you open up one or two Chronicles, one or two Kings, and you see what happens when they're like, oh, let's be like everybody else.
Yep.
They get absolutely destroyed, or to use Father Stephen Felicia's words, they get absolutely wrecked by the other nations. So anyway, when they try to become like other nations, who, by the way, at the time would use tattoos in order to set them apart from everybody else,
right,
and just to mark up their skin, and also as kind of like, you know, not really like a good or like morally evil bad thing or whatever, but it was like these tattoos for them were not good by any means.
Right.
So
it was a tribal distinction, I think.
Yeah, tribal distinction for identity's sake.
But the problem is that tribal distinction was probably very directly related to pagan, you know, idol worship.
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah, yeah.
So in this situation, understanding the tattoos, the tattoo law from Leviticus, it's probably more on the order of like the same thing we hear in the Ten Commandments. You know, you shall not have false gods before me, That's an important thing to remember, right? And so this falls under that particular commandment. I think it's most directly related to that.
Right.
And nowadays, I mean, so how does that apply to tattoos today? Well, I mean, there are plenty of things out there you can still get and marked in your flesh, which definitely have evil significance. It's not surprising that someone who maybe is a baptized Christian maybe would want to avoid the whole principle of getting some sort of big crazy thing all over your back, you know, that has, you know, demonic incantation stuff written in it or something like that, or even like skulls and all this crazy, like, whatever. There are certain things that would be certainly imprudent and likely sinful especially for a baptized Christian to get marked on the flesh. So anyway, these things taken in consideration.
Yep, but very much so. Yep. And I think we'll be getting to this later about the object, intention, and circumstance for tattoos. After we outline a few more things here about tattoos, I think that we will very much get into object, intention, circumstance for tattoos.
Yeah. The three necessary things for a moral act.
Yes. Right?
Those are some principles for moral theology for those who don't know.
Yes.
So anyway.
And so too, going back to Leviticus here, just to finish out this topic here for Leviticus, since that was under the old law, as we know, Christ came to fulfill the law, and then thus, by fulfilling it, he gave us the new law, the new testament, the new commandments. And thus, by fulfilling that law, as we know, we can eat bacon these days. Like,
right, yeah.
And thank you, Jesus, for that.
Thank God.
that tastes wonderful.
Yeah.
So, by Christ coming to fulfill the old law and give us this new law that builds upon the old law and helps to actually, you know, set things aright too, is that this no longer applies because it's part of the old covenant, the old law. And so if we were to say that what is written in Leviticus does apply today, then you have to have everything else that goes with it. So
right,
that means no red meat, no trimming of the facial hair, and everything else that goes on in that passage around it. So you can't just piecemeal it together.
Right.
It's an all, I don't want to say really it's an all or nothing, but more or less that's what you're going to take from that.
Right. And I think if people really were like, okay, fine, I'm going to do everything Leviticus says, they would very quickly run into problems of, well, that doesn't even make sense in my own context. I can't even do that. You know, I can't do this or that law because it's, for one thing, I may not even be able to understand it because I don't have the right context. For another thing, I don't have the means to do what they're saying. You know, I live in this world. I don't live in old world, you know, Fertile Crescent, you know, like,
right,
it won't make sense for me in any way. So yeah, you have to be careful about how you read the Old Testament. You have to read it in the light of an understanding of the coming of Christ and continue to do more study on that. You know, we're not fundamentalists. Okay, good. So that's Leviticus. That's sort of like, that seems to be like the principal biblical argument against tattooing.
Right, because you can find it in the Bible, and it's very easy to identify.
Right, and as we've said, there are pieces of it that make sense and can still be applied to certain moral circumstances.
Yes,
in the current state.
Correct.
You know? Yeah. Okay. Great. But where do we go from there? Where do you want to take us from there, Deacon Keaton Lockwood?
Well, I think that we need to go back to kind of talk about the history of tattoos just very briefly. Since we started with Leviticus, you know, that's part of the history of tattoos. Like I said, just very briefly talk about the history of tattoos, because that'll help direct us for the rest of the conversation here as far as some other topics that we can hit on.
Okay.
So a very brief history of tattoos was, I think it was about 30,000 years ago, there was a person who lived, and they unearthed this person somewhere over in Europe, I think it was. And they found out that they could see red stains on their bones. So that indicated that there was some sort of tattooing already going on that far in our past.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So super, super long ago. So, but then we go closer to modern times here, which puts us in about the 1800s. So when you get to about the 1800s or so, tattoos were normally only a part of islanders. So like Pacific Islanders, native tribes, they would tattoo on themselves in mm-hmm. order to identify them with other things, or like to acquire strength through other things or other people, etc.
Right.
These were also the same people that would, of course, eat the heart of their enemy in order to acquire their strength, also wear the enemy's skin in order to acquire their strength and become stronger in that way.
So pretty severe tribalism going on here.
Pretty severe tribalism right there. And I think that's important to associate that tattoo with the eating of like hearts and wearing of the skin and that sort of tribalism, because one, it shows identity, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, because that's a huge part of tattoos is identity,
right,
and storytelling.
Right.
That's going to be a big part. But also, they were trying to enhance themselves or become better than themselves through these tattoos and everything else. So in that circumstance, as we had talked about, bad, like, you know, like,
well,
shouldn't be doing that.
Well, you have to take them in their own context as well. Like they this is a pre-Christian society, so
correct,
you know, in their mind they were calling on some sort of higher power that was above them and using these means to do so in some sort of more or less superstitious, even though they wouldn't have called it that, you know, act. And some of these things still sort of have remnants of existence. I mean, talk about like Polynesian folks, people in Hawaii and, you know, in New Zealand, and these guys all have these kind of tribal tattoos, and these are very common. You see these all over the place,
right?
You know, that are kind of like wave shaped and all these kind of different designs and stuff. That's a lot of Polynesian tribes, especially, have that sort of thing. But yeah, so that might be a remnant of that culture, and it might be something that is pretty innocuous now. I mean, it's not really that. Maybe problematic.
Yeah, it's not as prevalent now as it was back then.
It's much more of just like a cultural, you know, it's the identity thing. Like you said, it's like, I am from, you know, these are my people. This is an identification of my family. Like, okay, there are some things about that might even be good, you know, but you're right. Like the origins of this stuff can be dangerous. Especially in relation to like the demonic and all that kind of stuff. Danger.
Right. Oh, danger. Yeah. So then we move a little bit into the 1800s here, in which tattoos were brought from the Pacific Islanders to like the Western world.
Mm.
And this was by Captain Cook, who sailed for Britain. And so he went on an exploratory mission, and he landed on one of these islands somewhere. And when they were exploring, they actually discovered this art of tattooing. And so they thought that it was interesting, so they learned the technique and then brought it back to England with them when they went back. However, before they went back, there was actually one ship that actually mutinied against their captain and chose to stay on the island because they liked the air, they liked living on the beach, you know? I mean, to a certain extent, who wouldn't like to live on a beach in nice tropical weather,
sure,
eating a whole bunch of nice fruits and vegetation and just having no cares in the world? I mean, to a certain extent, that sounds like a nice relaxing vacation nowadays.
Until the hurricane comes.
Yeah, until the hurricane comes. Yeah. Sadly, they weren't there during the hurricane. So anyway, they had mutinied, and when they chose to stay on the island, they actually got some tattoos somewhere on their body to actually identify with their with these new people now.
Wow.
So they actually had changed from, in their mind, from being English to being what part of this native tribe. In order to show solidarity with them, in order to have this new identity, they got some tribal markings on them in order to become one with the people.
Mm.
So that's really cool in that respect. But anyway, Captain Cook goes back to England, and he takes this tattooing with him. However, when he got back to England, tattoos were only popular among sailors. Now, sailors were considered the lower class of England, like pretty low on like the class scale, didn't make a whole lot of money, weren't thought a lot about. So you start associating sailors with some typical traits of drunkenness, rowdiness, not listening very well.
And they have these tattoos.
And now they have tattoos. So now tattoos are associated with all these things.
In a lower class of society as well.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's interesting.
So then, just in order to make the problem worse, if you can say so, since these sailors would become rowdy and drunk and everything, the police had to lock them up in jail, or in some other cases, prison. Well, they got to these prisons or jails, and it was, hey, where'd you get that tattoo? I want one of those. So now you're having...
It's being passed on.
Now you're having criminals getting tattoos, and thus, that's where the stigma of tattoos comes from back in the 1800s there, is that sailors had gotten these, and then they, unfortunately, some of them were sent to prison. Prisoners, who are these criminals in some respects, wanted these tattoos because they thought they looked cool and everything, and thus, the association of tattoos being not good, associated with gang members, prisons, criminals, right, just like the stigma of tattoos started becoming popular in the 1800s.
Right.
And it lasted until about World War II time-ish. Shortly after World War II, tattoos actually started becoming like normal, if you can say so, more commonplace. Because before World War II, if you would see somebody with a tattoo, they were most likely associated with military or had been in jail. And so,
which, depending on who you ask, those two may be pretty close to the same thing.
That's right. When Steven comes back from quarantine, he can comment on that.
Yeah, right.
So the stigma for tattoos actually really wasn't lifted till after World War II sometime, in which, like, you know, you could see somebody on the street with just like, you know, a blue jay or something tattooed on their wrist, or like a birthday or something tattooed on their ankle or whatever. And it's like, oh, okay, like, you don't think anything of it nowadays because it's become more normal and more accepting in the culture, just because it took off to where like the everyday common person could now get a tattoo, because you had these millions of soldiers coming home who had some sort of tattoo in memory of their time of being in the military or overseas or whatever. And also, once again, this identity theme, which we're going to talk about immediately after this, because this is very clearly where we're pointing here. They identified with a certain type of culture, or like their unit, you know, their brothers in arms. And it was like, you know, this is who we are. Like, we've taken on this other identity.
Sidebar.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Slight sidebar by way of example, none other than my grandfather. Yep. Grandpa. Hi, Grandpa. Hope you're listening. Sheldon DeGrasse, my mom's dad. Okay. He has on one arm. So he was actually a part of, he was on an aircraft carrier during the Korean conflict, the Korean War, right? And the unit that was there was known as the Death Rattlers. He was working the catapults on the on the ship deck to shoot off the Corsairs.
Yeah, to launch the Corsair planes,
right?
Yeah.
But the unit was called the Death Rattlers, okay? And so, now, I mean, I know it's... Welcome to the military. They're naming these things, scary things on purpose because we're military, right? Okay, fine. But on one arm, he's got this... Okay, it's probably not appropriate. He's in the military, and the thing was called the Death Rattlers, okay? So, obviously, death and rattlesnakes. He's got, on one arm, he has got a skull with a knife through it, and it has a snake wrapped around it.
Really?
Sounds super evil, but when you take it in the context of his military position, like, he was working with a unit called the Death Rattlers, okay? So, anyway, that's what he was referring to. However, on the other arm, he's got a small tattoo that has two roses on it. And he got a rose per water buffalo. And Keaton's looking at me going, What are you talking about?
Water buffalo? Were they all shooting water buffaloes?
Uh-huh.
That's what it is?
Yes. He was...
All right, you have to expand on this briefly. Expand.
He only told me the story like earlier this year, but he was telling us about it at the dinner table. He's been dropping some more fun stories from when he was in the Navy. It was rather funny. I guess he was on some sort of mission. He was in the helicopter and he was manning the gun, and big 50 caliber gun, you know. And he ends up seeing these two water buffalo that are just walking out in the plane, and he freaking shoots them. And he's like, got both of them. And so later on, he went and got a tattoo with two roses to signify his two kills. These two water buffaloes, and I mean, he's kind of like, yeah, I didn't know whose they were, but we were just out and about, and this is something that happened, you know. I don't know. So anyway, hopefully that's not like a war crime or something. Sorry, Gramps, I just threw you under the bus. But anyway, yeah. So my grandpa has tattoos from his time in the military. crazy stories. I think he's got another one somewhere. But anyway, not uncommon. Not uncommon in the military. But, okay, the identity thing. I want to hear what you have to say about this, because I think this is really an interesting part of the conversation.
Yeah. So as I've said multiple times throughout this, tattoos are associated with identity. And I think that this gets to, like, a core of what tattoos are and, like, how they actually can be used appropriately for certain things. So as we had said earlier, the English sailors or whatever that decided to remain on the Pacific Island decided that they were going to get tattoos to make themselves a part of that group, to actually show solidarity with that group. So they took on a new identity by receiving these tribal markings on them to show that they have become this new person and in that respect. Kind of like when we get baptized, we receive this indelible mark on our soul that shows that we are now a child of God. We're associated with Him. And in a way, these outward signs, these tattoos, mark the person in order to identify them with another group of people, sometimes for worse, most of the time for better. So then with this identity thing, it allows that person to outwardly tell their story. It allows the person to express their identity in an outward fashion, so that way then other people could more easily identify who this person is and how they're associated with them. There's a book that I like to mention here. It's called The 21, The Tale of the Coptic Martyrs. I don't know if you've heard of it, Dan.
Okay, but I know I can see where you're going with this.
Yeah, so yeah. This was my spiritual reading of this past semester here. Awesome, awesome book. Can't recommend it highly enough. But in the book, Coptic Christians who are located in Egypt and around that area mostly get a tattoo just below like their knuckle on their thumb of a small cross. Mm-hmm. And that tattoo is an outward expression of who they are, that they are undeniably Christian, that, you know, it's hard to cover up your thumb with anything. You know, if you get a tattoo on your shoulder, on your back or something like that,
you can at least wear a shirt.
Yeah, you can wear a shirt and it's easier to cover up. But the Coptic Christians get this small little cross tattoo right below the knuckle of their thumb. So in every day in their actions, they're acting as Christians, and that this cross, and it's on their hand, every time they do something with their hands, it reminds them that they are followers of Christ, that they are Christians. They have this new identity that identifies them with the beyond, the here to come, the beatific vision, and thus it propels them to live their identity now as adopted sons and daughters of Christ so that way they may inherit eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
And in this book, the 21 Coptic martyrs, of whom 20 were actually Coptics, and there was another guy there who was just working with them, who was caught up in it, who was not Coptic, but he was martyred with them. They all were martyred because of their faith. When they were asked to deny God and asked to renounce God and take on Allah as their one true God and Muhammad as his prophet, that's all they had to say, and they would be set free. All of them refused because of that new identity that they have with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
This cross that they had tattooed on them reminded them daily of this new identity.
Right.
And also, this guy who was not Coptic, who was with them, who was martyred, they killed him last because they wanted him to witness the death of all of his friends.
Mm.
And because they were certain that these terrorists were certain that he would convert, because they're like, well, you're not Coptic, you're not Christian, like, you don't have to die like them, just accept the faith. And one by one, they killed his friends in front of him in a very brutal, brutal way.
Yeah, we've seen some of that happen in recent years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and when they finally got to him, they gave him a last chance, and it's reported that he said that I want to die just like my friends, because if they're willing to die for this faith, if they're willing to die for this, then I want to die just like them. I want to go the same route that they did, because they're my friends and I accept their faith as my faith.
Wow, a baptism by blood.
Baptism by blood is basically what had happened there.
Wow.
And it was just unbelievable. So that takes us to our identity part that we're focusing on here.
Right.
Is that these tattoos, they put an identity on a person, and to remove a tattoo, it's a very long and painful and excruciating process to remove it. It's way more painful to remove a tattoo than to get it. It's really, really bad. They use like sound waves and everything, and it's a different sound wave and laser to remove each part of the ink, and actually kind of boils the ink up out of your skin, and they have wipe it away. And it's excruciating, and that's why you have, and like they have to do it for each color on your tattoo. And it's just,
oh wow.
Yeah. So by taking on this mark, this identity, this outward expression of who you are, you're telling the whole world exactly who you are. You're not hiding it
right
from somebody. So when you see somebody that's from the military that has these military tattoos, they're proud of being associated with this cause, with this group, with this people, because these people help make them who they are,
right,
and who they will become in the future. And they're not afraid of showing other people and telling them that. And then also on top of this, and then this is kind of where I'll drop off on the identity issue, and then we'll let Deacon Dan finally comment on his own podcast show, is they tell a story.
Right.
And I think this is the other side of the identity coin, is they tell a story. So what do I mean by that? Is that when you see somebody with a tattoo, it's very easy to judge that person. I think that for some of us, we just don't like tattoos. I'll tell you right now, I personally do not like tattoos one bit. And this is a guy sitting over here talking about them and saying that you could get them depending on what they are, intention, circumstance, etc. I just don't care for tattoos. My thing would be like, you know, get the picture on a, like, you know, a poster board or like on a piece of canvas or something. But I see the value in tattoos in certain circumstances and certain tattoos too. But this the object of storytelling. So when you see somebody with a tattoo, that gives you a conversation piece to actually go up and engage the person. If you're just walking down the street or riding a subway, probably not doing that now because of COVID, but you know, before and after COVID, when you're near somebody and you see somebody with like, you know, a mountain range tattooed on like their shoulder, or like an image of Christ that's tattooed on their forearm or something, or you see like, you know, like a date tattooed on them, it gives you a conversation piece to say, hey, you know, I noticed you got this tattoo. Can you explain what this date is? And it opens up that whole person's world to you. It allows them to express their identity to you by telling you, yeah, that was the date that my father passed away on, and me and him were really close, and the last few years of his life were rough, and that date reminds me to keep him in my prayers and to keep him close to my heart, mm-hmm. so I never forget him. And it's, wow, like, I would never have known that about you unless you had that tattoo, and I asked you about that tattoo. The tattoo allows a person to explain a story that is personal and intimate to their heart, and it allows you to come very close to the core of their heart, to allow them to actually express themselves and tell you about this story. I'll conclude the storytelling with a story of a monk who was tattooed all over the place. So there was this biker, and I don't have his name off the top of my head.
This is a great story.
Yeah.
I love this story. Go
so
ahead.
He, yeah. He was a biker, and he went through kind of like a midlife crisis in which, like, he just didn't know what to do. So he started biking, you know, on his Harley or whatever he owned, cross country, got tattoos literally pretty much everywhere on his body, from like his neck down, even like on his knuckles, on the palm of his hands, just like everywhere there was tattoos. And during this midlife crisis, he just had this revelation one day that he needed to go on some type of retreat. He doesn't really explain it much more than that, but he needed to go on retreat. And so he went to this local monastery. I want to say it's a Benedictine monastery. And he went there on retreat, and it was just a short retreat, a few days or something like that. And during that retreat, he found God for like the first time during this retreat, and that God was just revealed to him in a new way. And he saw the peace that these monks had, that they knew exactly what was going on, what, like, they weren't having any of these crises, any of these identity crises. So after praying at the retreat, he started to pursue an avenue to actually join these monks. And so he joined this religious group. And, you know, he's got the full habit on and everything. And when you're part of a religious community, and Dan can speak to this better than I can, but that's another topic for another conversation, as far as like religious community life, because you've looked into it more so than I have and other stuff.
I've done some study.
But anyway, when you're part of a religious group, you basically get like a house job. You know, you get a specific role in the group. You know, you take care of the garden, you shovel the driveway, you know, you repaint this, you set up for mass every day, you know, you contribute. So this former biker guy who went through a midlife crisis and has all these tattoos, like I said, on the palm of his hand, on the knuckles, just you can see him outside of his habit because his habit doesn't cover everything, was made the porter of their museum that they have and for this monastery. And so he's the one that greets every single person that comes through this monastery. And you're probably thinking to yourself, why in the heck would you put a guy that's got all these crazy tattoos? And I mean, we were talking like skull and crossbones type of tattoos on this guy. And it's like, why would you put him as the face of this? And so he's welcoming everybody. And after doing that for a while, he went to his superior and he asked that exact same question. Hey, you know, why did you put me as the porter of this, you know, monastery, of this museum part of our monastery, when I have all these tattoos? I would like to go through some tattoo removal treatment in order to get my hands and my neck at least free of these tattoos. So that way then I, you know, actually look hospitable and like these people aren't scared of me. And his superior said something to him that I think, you know, ends our conversation about identity and, you know, just telling a story very well. His superior said to him, no, you can't get your tattoos removed because the tattoos are a part of you and they tell your story. They tell your story of how you've grown up, of how you went through this crisis, on how you were on the brink of just forsaking everything. And now you found God, and this is where you're at. Your tattoos are a part of you because they tell your story. They tell your identity in order to make you here. So if we remove your tattoos, we remove a part of you, we remove a part of your story that you cannot tell other people without those tattoos, because you would just look like anybody else.
Right.
And so these tattoos, when the people would see them, this monk with these weird tattoos, they would be like, wow, like, how did you get here? And guess what? He was able to tell them about how he found God. Anybody that walked through that door, because the tattoo started the conversation of how you got here.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is scriptural in its own sense, right? I mean, this is the reason why Jesus is hanging out with prostitutes and tax collectors. you know, Mary Magdalene, the one who had seven demons removed from her, is like one of the foremost disciples of the Lord, right? She is the Apostola Apostolorum, the apostle to the apostles. She's the one who announces the resurrection. Like, okay, but she was the originally the one who was sleeping with everybody and had this crazy demonic possession involved with her life, okay? Like, Jesus engages everybody in the place that they are, you know, and he will find a way in if they allow it. It's how it works. But anyway, so it's interesting that the tattoo thing is something that is completely is so much engaged with people's identity, what they associate with on the deepest levels, you know. And so you were talking a little bit about the Coptic Christians, just for a little bit of context. Copts, Coptic Christians are in Egypt, all right, which is a very you know, kind of war-torn area, is especially when it comes to interreligious dialogue. Not a lot of dialoguing going on. It's usually just fights, right?
Oh yeah, very much so. Very much so.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Muslims and that kind of stuff. There have been a number of radical cases in which Coptic Christians have had to show themselves for martyrdom, especially in the face of, you know, some pretty crazy Muslim activity and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, this has happened even in recent days. I mean, it doesn't take very much Google searching to find exact cases of this sort of thing happening. And one of the reasons why they were getting these tattoos, it was basically like a badge to get in to church. You know, if you didn't have one of these tattoos, you couldn't come to church. That's basically what I'm kind of trying to get at. So, but there was also, there's also a tradition that maybe we can talk about a little bit, of pilgrims getting tattoos, right?
Oh yeah. When they go to Holy Land, right?
Right. Right. So, and this was something, I guess it was pretty common for Coptic Christians to, when they went to the Holy Land, it was a pretty much kind of unwritten rule. It might have even been a written rule, but that, like, Coptic Christians, since you're close enough, you go to the Holy Land. Like, you make a trip to the holy sites in Jerusalem, you know. And while you're there, you get a tattoo. Now, it's very interesting, and I think there were a number of news sources that you can go and find these articles that are still out there today. There's this one family that has roots in that tradition, and they've been doing tattoos in the Holy Land for like 700 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, shout out to the Razouk tattoo, you know, parlor shop place. So the Razouk family, now it's being run by, I think his name is Wasim.
Yeah.
Wasim Razouk.
And also, just for context too, like, Deacon Dan, last Christmas, more or less, your class went to the Holy Land,
right,
and spent like 2 weeks there.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, so Deacon Dan was over there, like, where this tattoo parlor shop is and whatnot. So like, he's actually seen this and seen like the Jerusalem cross tattoos and whatnot too. So just like,
right,
to put in some more context too, like, we're not just speaking from articles, like,
right,
he actually saw the Holy Land for himself and like brought back a rock. So like, he's got a part of the Holy Land. Anyway,
brought back a rock and more than the rock. Yeah, so myself and a couple of my classmates, who I'll leave unnamed, went into this parlor, and I got to meet Wasim Razouk, and I, for myself, got on my shoulder a tattoo of Our Lady holding the Christ Child. So it's interesting. I know everyone sort of has different opinions about this, but I, you know, had been thinking about it a full year before I went to the Holy Land. I have a little bit of ink on the right shoulder there,
but anyway, a little bit of Holy Land ink on the right shoulder, exactly.
And but it's amazing, because you're talking about something that's been in a tradition, for Christians who are approaching possibly martyrdom, and that's why they get these tattoos, for 700 years, like, the same family has been doing this, you know. It's been passed down generation to generation. I don't think, as Americans, we don't think about things in context of 700 years. We've hardly done anything for 400 years here on, you know, Europeans, as far as colonization and all that kind of stuff on this land, right? So, yeah. So before, you know, Europeans landed on, you know, what would be American soil, The Razook family had already been doing this for 300 years. Like, what? That's crazy. It's insane, you know? But the context of, you know, pilgrimage, like you are intentionally going to the holy places to, you know, take this retreat, to give, you know, something of yourself to God, to be taxed and to be, strained and have some fatigue of the pilgrimage, you know, and because traveling, especially in olden times, was difficult. Like, this became a little bit of a badge of honor of, like, completing your pilgrimage. And it was something that, you know, especially for Coptic Christians, was not only the way you would get into church, but also could possibly lead to martyrdom because you have it ingrained in your flesh, an image of the Lord or an image of a cross or Our Lady or something, anything that would be indicative of being a Christian, right? So it's interesting. It's an interesting topic. And I think one thing that we definitely want to talk about is how this relates to our understanding of beauty, right? And that we've mentioned, Father Stephen and I have mentioned a couple times, Deacon Keaton, class that Dr. Miravalli taught us in seminary, the beauty course.
Oh yeah, shout out to Dr. Miravalli.
Right, the truth and beauty course. And just talking about the importance of understanding beauty as one of the transcendentals, right? You have God is good and true and beautiful, right?
And one,
right? He's unified, right? Okay, so all these things being positive things we can say about God, and not just saying he isn't this and he isn't this. We can say he is beautiful. We can say he is good. We can say he is true, right? So, but anyway, beauty in relation to the Lord. And how is that reflected in nature? Of course, there are plenty of beautiful things that are in creation. You know, first revelation, how God reveals himself is by the beauty of creation. And then when it comes to mankind, how do we sort of take part in that creative action of God? Well, one of the things we do is we go about decorating. Like, the reason why Christian societies, you know, continue to hang decorations in, you know, your rooms, in your house. And it's because we recognize we need beauty. I mean, we're sitting in the study in the rectory here at St. Jude, in my study. And I mean, I've got, you know, images on the wall, which actually Deacon Keaton gave to me, various images in the form and style of Van Gogh that are actually depictions of things that happen in the Lord of the Rings. I have images of the saints. I have, you know, a nice and beautiful crucifix here. Various statues of different saints, other things that I've gotten from the Holy Land, all these kind of things as inspirations, as things which always are indicative of, yes, and including a knight from Poland hanging on the wall over there. Anyway, so, but in comparison to, like, a communist society where everything is made of concrete and it's all square and there are no decorations, like, you see, but what's indicative of you know, communist socialist countries? They're godless. They are without God, and so it's not maybe surprising that there is no decoration. Now, one place that decoration is sort of most prevalent or should be is in our church buildings, right? You have church buildings which are built in a certain architectural style, maybe, or are ornamented in such a way, especially with stained glass. You know, we don't just use drab things. Like, if you walk into one of the, basically, if anyone ever visits Rome, you can walk down the street and enter a church, and then walk down the street a little bit more and enter the next church and the next church. And all of these things are beautiful, old Roman style churches that have, like, glorious, wonderful murals in the ceiling and behind the altar and, you know, wherever, but, like, you wouldn't find that anywhere else, and it's appropriate to that place. Now, would the church building itself function well enough if there wasn't any, ornamentation? Sure. The Mass can be said basically anywhere, given the right qualities of it and everything, but like, a church building that has the proper decoration on the order of fittingness is much more appropriate for the Holy Sacrifice, right? It's much more appropriate for the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, because of what it indicates about who God is, right? So if we really take that to be true, and if we are personally temples of the Holy Spirit, then, you know, one argument for tattoos, given the appropriate, like, yeah. So, like, me having an image of Our Lady on my shoulder now, that is a certain decoration of my temple of the Holy Spirit, which is my person, right? It is a way for me to sort of give thanks to God for my own being, for my own self, for making me into a temple of the Holy Spirit by further ornamenting it and giving it back to Him, right? It's an interesting way to do it, of course. It's and because of all the social context of, you know, the 1800s and, you know, sailors and criminals and military people and, you know, other lower class people in society or whatever, like, because of the association with those things, people are either like, you're either in the military or you're a bad person. It's like, well, that's not entirely the case, is it? It's not entirely the case. It's not as simple as that. But it's interesting. I like the argument from fittingness of, like, the decoration of the temple. You know, the way we do it with our churches is perhaps, you know, appropriate with our bodies. And just like it would be, you know, maybe inappropriate to decorate a church poorly, it's also inappropriate to decorate it with tattoos our body.
Oh, that's poorly. That, yeah, that's a great point right there.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, you wouldn't want to hang, you know, I don't know, you wouldn't want to use a bunch of burlap and cover up the stained glass windows and, I don't know, use the wrong material for altar cloths and all this kind of stuff, or have, like, a wonky shaped altar, or, like, all these things that are actually detracting from the beauty of the space.
Or, like, carve race cars into the altar, or, like, the pews, and it's like,
right, completely inappropriate things that don't make sense there, right? But, you know, we do make commemorations, even in the very stone of churches, of people who have died. Right, we have commemorative things in our churches of people who have passed away. One very common thing for people to get tattooed on them is, like you said, you know, this is the date my dad died, and it's on my arm to remind me to pray for him, to remind me of my love that I have for him and continue to do so, you know, unto heaven. Right, like that's different than getting a huge skull tattooed on your face. Okay, make the distinction here. Right, there is something different about that. Right. One encourages an understanding of the divine. The other one encourages worldliness and possibly, you know, there might be even, and probably are, connections to the demonic, right? To the other side.
Oh, yeah.
To the bad guys.
Scary stuff.
You don't want to do that, right? You know, if you get your favorite Bible verse tattooed on you, that's probably fine, right? You know, now granted, also, probably not a good idea to get it on your forehead.
Right, right.
Get it in a place that makes sense, you know. But, like, how it's about where you get it. It's about what you get. It's about your intention behind it, right? So these are those three things of the moral act.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. And also something that you had said earlier, Dan, about when you went to the Holy Land, you had mentioned that you had been thinking about this tattoo for a year by that point, like praying with it, thinking about it. And that's actually what's recommended before you get a tattoo, because, I mean, if you don't know this already, tattoos are pretty permanent.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't just, like, remove it easily. So if you can imagine yourself waking up every day and do this for, like, 6 months to a couple years and imagining that tattoo of whatever you're thinking about getting on your body, where you're thinking about getting it, and waking up every day with that image on there, and, you know, and you're wearing t-shirt, tank top, you know, blue jeans, whatever, like all the different lifestyle, all the different clothes to accommodate your lifestyle out there in the world, you know, would you still like this tattoo 2 years after you get it? Will you still like it 10 years after you get it? And just to keep that in mind and to do that, just mentally imagine for, like I said, that 6 months to a couple years, what this tattoo looks like on your body. And, like, can you wake up every day and be around, you know, your loved one, your spouse or whatever, with this tattoo on it? You know, just keep that in mind, because, you know, once you get a tattoo, it's not that easy to remove. So it's not just like, oh, I bought this thing from Amazon and I can return it. No, this is pretty permanent. This is, in a way, this is a life-changing decision here, life-altering, at least, right. Decision. So right. just be careful and, like, you know, plan this out and actually think about it, and always go back to the object, intention, circumstance, which is what Dan was talking about.
Right. And I think one of the things people especially in Western society, we've gotten really bad about making good commitments.
Yeah, commitments are hard for us. Good commitments.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is why, you know, we still have a divorce rate of 50% and maybe worse. I don't know. It's why, you know, so many men in like the 60s left the priesthood. It's why, you know, we have all these problems. We don't have a vocation crisis. We have a commitment crisis, you know, which we're still fighting through. And granted, in the Diocese of Fort Wayne South Bend, it seems like we're doing pretty well nowadays, right? In comparison to what had happened. But you're right. But on the order of, this is just one small example of a commitment problem. There are lots of people who will get tattoos on a whim and they don't think about the longer standing circumstances of that, you know, commitment. So anyway, yeah, that's perhaps getting into some of the nitty gritty, but
yeah. And if I can just comment real quick on the decoration thing that you had mentioned,
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we see decoration as a form of art, especially when we look at churches, you know, the fine ornateness, especially if you go to your cathedral. You know, most of the time your cathedral is really ornately decorated with fine woodwork, fine stonework in there. And like, we tend to notice the big stuff, like the big statues, the big altar, the big chair.
Mm.
But then when you actually start looking at those things that are around it, just like the little flower decorations that are at the base of the statue, or like the little like curlicue things, I don't know what you're supposed to call them, like on like the sure. woodwork or whatever.
Right.
It's like, wow, like a lot of time and effort went into that. And, you know, you may be able to research, you know, who the stoneworker was or who the woodworker was that did these big pieces. But what about all those other little people that made these little curlicue things right. or these little flower decorations happen? And they will go unknown for all time because there's no record of them because their contribution was so small. But just imagine if that wasn't there.
Right.
Like if that decoration had been removed, that there wasn't those little curlicue wispy things or flowers around like the statue or around the chair, like how much less would that be? And I think we kind of take that for granted, and that tattoos are like this decoration, as Deacon Dan had mentioned earlier, is that our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. So we, just like our churches that house the Lord and the Blessed Sacrament and the tabernacle, we want to adorn our churches in order to help people to pray, to point them towards heaven, to give them an environment that allows them to pray. So too, we want to adore our bodies, decorate our bodies in such a way that points towards heaven, which mm-hmm. is why, you know, we wear appropriate clothing. You know, we keep, you know,
modesty.
Yeah, yeah, modesty too. Right. And
so
like,
modesty is a virtue. Tattoos are a part of the virtue of modesty.
Right.
I mean, there's a connection there for sure.
Yeah. And so like with this tattoo of decoration, nearly all tattoo artists never sign their work. So, I mean, that's pretty humbling to know that after he does this amazing masterpiece, if we can call it that.
Yeah, hopefully it's masterful.
Yeah, hopefully it's a masterpiece. Right. Like this really, in a way, it can be really gorgeous too. Artwork, and it's just simple onto somebody, their artwork leaves the room, and they most likely will never see that piece of artwork again. And you can't Google it. You can't like take a copy of it, quite literally, because it's on their skin, and keep it for yourself. Mm-hmm. They have to let their decoration go. And like I said, that tattoo artist won't be remembered for that. And also, these tattoos, something interesting to mention, is that they're only around for a short time. Because once you're dead,
right,
the tattoo
decomposes, goes away.
Yeah, for the most part, goes with you. Now, there are museums that actually save tattoos, and they actually do remove them from your skin after you died and everything. And
yeah.
That is honestly really, really gross. And I would have a hard time going into those museums. Yeah, but anyway, the point is, too, this decoration is not like the cathedral decoration. It's not going to stand for a few hundred years. It's going to be around for, you know, 20 to 50 years.
70 years or 80 for those who are strong.
There you go. Yeah, 80 for those who are strong.
Thank you. Thank you, King David, for the Psalms.
So, yeah. So, it's just, yeah. So, there's something really unique about that decoration, is that it's here for a limited time to enjoy it and to use it to point you towards heaven.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's good. It's always an orientation towards heaven, my friends. That's a... That's the entire point of everything we do in the Christian life, and hopefully the goal of this podcast. You know, we're trying to help people think through things that they're dealing with every day. I mean, there's a reason why in one of our episodes we talked about Metallica, right? How many people in our world listen to Metallica, and what is the church saying about that, right? How do we give a real response to it? What do we think about the problem of, or perhaps just cultural phenomenon of tattooing, right? How do we deal with that in a real, honest way that doesn't alienate people, that doesn't, you know, call everybody who has a tattoo a sinner and just leave them in the dust? Like, it's not as simple as that. It's never as simple as that. The only thing that is as simple and cut and, that is simple and cut and dry is God himself, right? God is simple. Nothing else in life is as simple as 1, 2, 3. You know, you have to be discerning about a lot of things, okay? So, anyway, my friends, we are sort of at our time limit. We don't want to go too much further. We don't want to bore you to tears. But Deacon Keaton Lockwood, it's been such a joy to have you on the show. Thank you very much for joining me here in lieu of Father Stephen's presence. And what a great topic. What a great topic. And I know you and I have had conversation on this thing before, and that's why we were able to sort of get to all the pieces of it. And I think we did a pretty good job of getting to everything.
Yeah, I think we covered pretty much everything. You know, we only get an hour or so we're never going to be able to cover everything totally, but I think we took a good crack at it. So
right.
We definitely hit a triple today. Maybe right. Not a grand slam, but definitely a triple.
It was pretty good. So, you know, hey, as always, this is the Deus Vult podcast. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. I've listed all that stuff on our website and everything. You can look for that. Also, you can send us an email at deusvultpodcast, no spaces, no underscores, no capital letters, deusvultpodcast@gmail.com. And maybe this week we can hear from some of our listeners and hear if there are any tattoos on you or in your family that you're sort of proud of that have indications of the divine, just to kind of give an example of these things. So I have Our Lady on my shoulder, and there are other men who I know even in seminary who have tattoos which are oriented towards the divine as well. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing in those circumstances. But anyway, hit us up. Let us know what you think. And follow us, like us on Facebook. Give us a review on whatever podcast app you're following us on. And until next time, Deus Vult.